Welcome to Sky Team's People First with Morag Barrett. Here, we'll be exploring the people side of successful businesses, careers, and lives. We all have a story to share, and there's something to be learned in every story. Join us to learn from authors, business leaders, thought leaders, and people just like you to uncover the latest ideas, resources, and tools to help you become more effective at work and life. As it turns out, the secret to success is cultivating winning relationships. Business is personal and relationships matter.
Welcome to this week's episode of People First. And my guest this week is Mustafa Hamwi, who is both a friend and colleague at work for me. He is a best-selling author, international speaker, and mindset coach, and his background spans diverse disciplines from executive coaching, hypnotherapy, yoga, and meditation to adventure sports and nature healing. Mustafa's unique lifestyle, which we will learn a little bit more about, as an executive nomad, has him traversing the globe, often spending months living out of a camper van, immersing himself in diverse cultures and forging a deep connection with nature. His quest for self-discovery leads him to learning and meditation centers worldwide, exploring the intricacies of mind, body, and soul. His life journey and extensive research have culminated in unparalleled knowledge and insight, and he's globally recognized as a foremost expert and thought leader in reigniting passion within organizations and teams. Mustafa, welcome to People First.
Morag, thank you very much for your kindness of inviting me on the show and for this amazing introduction.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation. And as with every episode, I start with the most important question. It may not answer the meaning of life, but it at least gives us a little bit of your origin story. So when you were a wee lad, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Interesting question. Funny, I said I wanted to be a firefighter. And I think that the funny part of the story was because of a cartoon. And the cartoon was of a little dragon that told his dad that he wanted to be a firefighter. And his dad was like, it cannot be, we're dragons. So we're supposed to be blowing fire. And he goes, no, I want to blow fire out. And funny that, although I didn't become a firefighter, but I think a lot of my life ended up being about challenging the norm in everything that's expected from me. It's probably the first time I reflect on this angle now that you ask me.
Oh, interesting. So what was the pivot point then that brought you to challenging the norms and the status quo?
It started with the fact of me being a sports team reject. Nobody wanted me on the football team. I was the guy that was standing always there when they're choosing teams. And I'm like, me, me, me. And then I go this way. And by the end, I was the guy left. And they're like, oh, no, we gotta get this guy. And from there on, I started exploring sports that were not usual because there weren't many people that wanted to do them. And I was crazy enough to explore those sports. I mean, they weren't as crazy at the beginning, but they were not the normal sports. So when I was in school, there was a small gymnastics team. So I got into gymnastics. I used to do ground gymnastics, trampoline. Then from gymnastics, I got into fencing, sword fencing. And then I got into show jumping to do horse riding. From there, I started exploring, more other adventure sports, got into scuba diving, eventually got into skydiving, paragliding, mountain biking, motor racing. So a lot of them were just about building my relationship with myself and putting myself under pressure. So although there was no real fires to fight, but there was a lot of challenges to overcome because I was betting my life, putting my life on the line with the sports that I do.
I love it. So I know one of the things that I shared in the introduction, but you're focused on is reigniting passion with the leaders that you work with around the world. And you've coined the phrase passionpreneur. Did I get that right? Passionpreneur. So tell us more about passionpreneur and what that means.
The passionpreneur conversation came, actually, I'm going to rewind a couple of steps, if you don't mind, to tell you the background story of how I got into the passion conversation and then how a passionpreneur evolved. So the passion conversation, I started my career in Dubai around 2000 doing public relations. Eventually, I started handling the public relations for Nokia in the Middle East, along other brands. I think we're, at least listeners of this show would be old enough to remember what Nokia is. It's a phone. It's one of the leading, was one of the leading mobile phone companies in the world. And what had happened is through that, I got exposed to all the concerts, nightlife and events because Nokia was the biggest budget holder at that time. It was one of the most successful companies. And I became the most popular guy in Dubai. I had tickets to every single concert, party, backstage access. I started throwing parties and all my parties became bigger and crazier. And eventually I quit the company and opened up my own business, took an events business from 4 people to 45 people, multi-million dollar turnover in a few years. My life only got crazier because by then I opened a modeling agency on top of the events agency. And I had my partners opened up the Cavalli Club, which is the one of the top nightclubs was in Dubai at that time. A few other ventures, which sound very fun for somebody in their 20s. But eventually, one day I woke up and I felt so depressed. I'm drinking, smoking, antidepressants, sleeping pills, all the messy stuff that nobody knows on the outside. And I woke up feeling so empty on the inside. I was really feeling every day I'm just drinking myself into sleep and partying myself into sleep. But just something is wrong inside me. And I woke up one day and I'm like, nah, none of this is working for me. And I bought a one-way ticket to India. And that was 2012. 2012, I had a long journey. That by itself needs a long interview. But the highlight of that journey was meeting a Swami or a guru that had been meditating in caves for 13 years. And throughout my interactions with him, I really realized that what I'm lacking in life is passion and purpose, true meaning for what I'm doing. And I met my guru in Manali, in India. And when I came back to Dubai, I started delivering inspirational talks called Cavalli to Manali, my story going from the nightlife into Manali where I met my guru. And I did that just for sharing, sharing my story with people. And random people would walk up to me and go, hey, you're that speaker guy. You changed my life. And that was kind of an aha moment for me because I was like, that's what I'm seeking. I'm seeking passion and purpose. I'm seeking meaning. I'm seeking to have impact on people's life, and I can do it through speaking and coaching. And this is how I got into the topic of passion. And over time, I started my talk show, which was called Passion Sundays. Back at that time, I've done about 160 face-to-face. I did none of the video. My decisions, I wanted to do old school with a camera, face-to-face with people. And then I got known to be Mr. Passion or the Passion Guy because I literally, for a couple of years, I asked one question to everybody I talked to. What does passion mean? How do you bring passion to life? How do you find passion when times are tough? And eventually, the national newspaper in Dubai ended up doing a feature about me. And they said, the Syrian who lost everything and became a passionpreneur. And that's how the passionpreneur conversation came up. And it was funny because one client came to me asking me to coach them. And I asked, so what do you want me to coach you on? He said, I want to be rich and famous. I'm like, that's not why I got into this. I was in a different business that was about being rich and famous. I didn't get into this for that. But I cannot deny that that person was an entrepreneur. So I cannot not call them an entrepreneur. So this is when I'm like, I want entrepreneurs of passion and purpose. And this is where the word came up, which is the passionpreneur.
So it's interesting because if I think about the leaders that I work with, many would say that they've lost their passion. Many would say they have yet to find their passion. And yet all would say they wish they had a passion and purpose. So why do people struggle to articulate or identify their passion and purpose or even to hold on to it?
Beautiful question, Morag. I think one thing I learned from my dear friend and mentor and coach, Ron Kaufman, he was one of the world's top, if not number one, customer service expert. In his book, Up Your Service, the first thing he does, he actually defines what service means. So I've learned that before we have any debate or conversation, we have to make sure there's a common understanding of the terminology. And what I realized at the beginning of my career that searching on the topic of passion, that passion is not defined well. Passion is like love. What does that mean? When you tell somebody, I love you, does that mean I love you for tonight? I love you because you serve my purpose. I love you because I'm benefiting from you. What does that mean? It's a very big word. And love is that, and passion is the same. So passion, when I looked up the dictionary definition, it meant any powerful or compelling feeling, which naturally means doing what you love. And that's what most people start operating from. I lose my passion because I'm not doing what I love, or I lost my feeling for what I love. And then I was interviewing Brian Tracy, and he said to me, you're never going to be passionate about something that you are not good at. And I'm like, makes sense. Because if I want to be a singer and I get on stage and I'm sounding like a goat every time I sing, people are going to boo me, throw tomatoes at me, and I'm going to lose my passion. So I have to then keep working at it till I get good at it. And that becomes, you know, passion. So the definition evolved from doing what you love into doing what you love and what you're good at. And then along the way, I was interviewing Ron Kaufman, who's world's leading authority on corporate culture, Thinker 50, and he said to me, be careful because the wrong kind of passion can hurt the world. And I'm like, what do you mean wrong kind of passion? I'm Mr. Passion. I've been doing this for a few years and there is no wrong passion. All passion is good. He goes, really, think about Hitler. He was doing what he loved and he was good at it, but it was not good for the world. And then the definition evolved to be the passion is doing what you love, what you're good at, and is a value to the world, because passion is purpose. So then there was the purpose element that came into that. I was doing that for a while, going, delivering inspirational talks and workshops around passion, helping people reignite passion. And I come back into the company after a few months and, hey guys, how's passion? And they go, passion, I'm like, no, that doesn't work. Then it's not passion, because then it means I'm just doing motivation, which is just momentarily, you know, carrot at the end of a stick. And I realized that there's a missing element in the definition of passion. And that element came to me from the story of me handling Nokia for a while, where Nokia was the number one, doing what they love, what they had, and is a value to the world. But then they were overtaken by BlackBerry, then overtaken by Apple, which was overtaken by a bit of Android, and then we've got wearables now. So what happened at the end of that is I'm like, passion is about consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So the true definition of passion is consistently doing what you love, what you're good at, and is of value to the world. If it is not consistent, then I would not call it passion. I would say it's something else. It could be a hobby. It could be somewhere in between a hobby and a profession. Americans call it pro-am. You know, you've got all these pro-am sports players that are somewhere in between. They're not full, but they're not just an amateur. So that could be a hobby, which is nothing wrong with it. I mean, you gotta get good at what you do and what you love so much, but you gotta keep at it until one day you make it into a profession. So you go from something that you're professional at to make your passion a profession. So now looping back to your question about leaders that lose their passion, it is very normal in life everything in life is cyclical. Nothing, we expect life to be a straight line, success to be a straight line or straight line up. Reality, we see it in everything. That straight line, when you zoom in, has a lot of curves and you know, peaks and dips along the way. So when we go to the dips along the way, we really need to stop and recalibrate and realign. And sometimes that means a diversion. That means that, okay, whatever we thought was our passion has proven not to be our passion. And then that might mean we need to make a total transformation, which was my case. I thought my passion, because I didn't know any better, I thought my passion was the party and the nightlife and the show off businesses and so on, until that led me to that dip, which then made me dive deeper and dig deeper to find a deeper answer, which then led me to find more of my true passion. And then that went up again. But that meant a total transformation in my life, from nightlife, events, partying, into whatever I'm doing now. And that along the way requires a few other things also, like healing past trauma and past conditioning, and mastering our mindset, which is what led me to this book. And I'll give you a reason why this is very important. Along the way, when I was working on passion, one gentleman flew me specially to work with his kid who was just about to graduate school. And that kid was a genius on food. Like he cooked a meal for us. And as I'm eating, he looked at me, he goes, you like this, you didn't like that? I'm like, how do you know? I even didn't tell you anything. He goes, I could see a little squint under your eye. This is how in tune he was with the food that he's creating. His dad was like, over my dead body, my son works in a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine no matter what I do with this person, he's not going to pursue that passion because there's a contradiction of my aspiration to make my dad proud of me and my family and my culture. And he will bury that, put a cement over it, build a building over it, maybe become a CEO one day. But deep inside, his craving and his calling is not that. So then the challenges in life will bring us down there to realign and recalibrate and go, is what I'm doing aligned with my passion or no? I'm not saying that everybody who goes through that dip necessarily needs to turn around and become a chef or change their career. But I'm saying when you're there, it's the right time to ask deeper questions about what we're doing.
So it's interesting because your book title is Slingshot, The Practical Guide to Becoming a Master of Your Destiny, Not a Victim of Your History. And you've talked there a little bit about how traditions, family pressures, expectations can cause us to not own our destiny, but to live a version of our lives that others define as successful. So how do you first uncover the things, the baggage that might be holding us back in order to rediscover the passion and purpose for today?
Beautiful question. This takes me to one part of the healing. So this book is split into two stages. First, healing the past, which I think of it as like clearing the ground to plant the seeds. And then the later stage is the mindset mastery, so you can continue on the journey once you've decided what is your true passion. So think of this slingshot as an augment to the Live Passionately, my first book. So you need first to do the healing part. Once you know your passion, you need to stay on the journey with the mindset mastery. Now, with that, for us to be able to discuss, to stay on track, we have to identify our top values, per se, and understand how what we're doing today aligns with those values. And back to your question about what a leader, you know, sometimes might feel doesn't align with them, we really got to ask ourselves questions about what prejudices we have and where they came from. So if we start looking, there are three types of prejudices. Prejudices that we have that are bigger picture, so they are about the world. So the world is fair, the world is not fair, anything that is too big that's on a planetary level. Okay, the planet is messed up. Anything that has been put in our head because of our culture, our community, whatever it is. The next layer is prejudices that we have against the community or others. So that's a closer circle that has been around us. I cannot do this because I'm of this tribe or of this clan or of this culture. I cannot do this because I'm an Arab. I cannot do this because I'm an English. I cannot do this because I'm American. Aussies don't do that. We all have those tribal affiliations. And then there's prejudices that we have because of us. So I cannot do this because I'm a man. I cannot do this because I'm a woman. Yeah, I cannot be in the kitchen because I cannot. And those are layered on top of each other. And we really got to first put a list of those things and go, okay, what prejudice do I have against that specific career or job or whatever, if it's truly my passion? I'll take that example of the kid who wanted to become a chef. Then if at a certain stage I'd be working with him and he discovered that that's a prejudice, the next question is, how can I do it better? I learned a beautiful term while I was doing some consulting work. The consulting industry has a term called decouple. That was beautiful for me. Not a native English speaker to learn that word. I'm like, huh, interesting word, because we treat everything as one bulk. Mm-hmm. But when we take it and decouple it, we're not throwing it all away. It's not an all yes and an all no. When we dismantle that and decouple it, we go, okay, this is okay to hold on to because it's an important value, but this is not useful. How can I replace that part? So then in the book, we do an exercise. You go, okay, the prejudice that I have is X, Y, Z. The next point is, how do I do it better? How can I be better? Why can I be better? Why can a man be good at being a chef against all the norms? And when I started working with that kid, his dad wasn't very happy, but I said, listen, you didn't pay me to do what you want. You paid me to help your kid find his answer. We started working going, okay, let's research the most famous chefs around the world. Statistically speaking, it was more at that time, it was more men than women talking about commercial chefs. So funny, the prejudice of the father was related to the home, not to the career as an industry. And if you look at somebody like Gordon Ramsay, I can't remember mm-hmm. the number now, but you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars famous TV. So money-wise, celebrity-wise, everything. And I'm sure his, you know, that guy's dad would be proud if he made it as famous as Gordon Ramsay. So all it is, it's about reframing and making mental shifts. But we cannot do that if we don't have the courage, using Dr. Marshall's terminology, you know, courage, humility, and discipline. If we don't have the courage to face the mirror and ask that question, and the humility to put hands up and say, listen, I need somebody to help me to get over that. And that's really what we do in one of the exercises in the book.
See, what I liked about that, though, is you're looking at both domains, my internal baggage and how I might be self-selecting myself out, I'll never be good at, and reframing it as, well, what are the baby steps? How do I learn to grow those skills or fill that passion bucket in a different way? But then also looking at that external conditioning, and then how do you reposition that conversation so that others can be your allies in our language and have your back and help you to realize those dreams?
100%. I think we put too much pressure on the internal, which is also not realistic. Context changes everything. You know, I think Dr. Marshall's book Triggers talks about that. We talk too much about the mindset and the go, go, go. And that's part of why I got into part of writing the slingshot. But I'll give you an example of context. If I tell you there's a red Indian with feathers standing in the street, would you say that looks weird or out of context?
Depends on which street it is.
Thank you very much. Typically, people jump into the conclusion and go, yeah, of course. I'd say, hold on. What if I told you there's a man wearing a suit standing in the middle of a street surrounded by red Indian tents, and that next to that guy, who's actually looking weird? The guy in the suit will look weird because he's out of context. We forget and we take context for granted, and that puts more pressure on our mindset. And this is part of the struggle that I had earlier on in my pursuit of my passion and purpose, because early on in a lot of the coaching methodologies and life coaching and executive coaching, back in the days, it was all about the go, go, go mentality. It's like you go, you can do it yourself. It's AAA character. You can do it. You make your own destiny. Forget about circumstances. And that's not realistic, because that burns people out. And I burned out being coached along the way of going, no, 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 forget about your excuses. Just go, go, go. And there was a point I cannot deny what was happening inside me. I'm like, dude, I'm doing my best. I'm 110% in. I'm doing my 16 hours. I'm doing all my work. I'm doing all my exercises, but something inside me is holding me back. It's like I run, and then get snapped back by a rubber band. So I'm making only incremental progress, and then I lose one step forward, two steps back. And this is when I ended up diving into the healing world. So I left. I'm like, no, there's something inside me I need to deal with. I went to the other side of the equation, and in the healing world, it was like digging a hole. The more I dug, the deeper I got. And then I come out of every workshop twice as broken, because I go in thinking I have one problem to solve. I solve that problem and uncover five other problems. And then I keep digging deeper and deep. And the more I dug, the deeper I got. And there's an inherent benefit to some of, and I, you know, I'm a bit critical. I know a lot of people might not like me for this, but there's a lot of inherent benefit to a lot of the very commercialized version of the self-help industry. Because I say the only one that makes money in a gold rush is a shovel company. So a lot of the players in that industry that are, you know, unfortunately at this stage, no longer became about changing people's lives. It became about selling a product, and they prioritized that over the value that they're offering. And I got stuck in that pendulum of, okay, go to a bit of coaching, go back to healing, go coaching, go healing. And I'm like, hold on. Maybe it's not this or that. Maybe it's both at the same time. So I do have to take a couple of steps back, dig deep, heal my past, but now I got to stitch that wound, let it heal, and let go of that drama and trauma and story that I'm attached to, so I can slingshot into the future. And this is where the coaching techniques come in and the executive coaching techniques come in. And then that's where the analogy of slingshot, take one step and release and slingshot into the future.
I like it. And again, it's great in theory, because I know I've sat there on that cusp of being released in that slingshot, and yet all the yes buts or the procrastination come out in my head that get in the way of actually releasing the power of the slingshot and catapulting forward. So how does one overcome the Yeah, I'll wait till next week when this project's finished. I'll wait until next month after the vacation. I'll wait until next year when I've got the promotion and the title I want.
Love your question, Morag. It's a very simple answer, which is, again, and one of the, and this is the mindset mastery section of the book. Otherwise, I was going to release the healing section as a book by itself and later release a mindset mastery book. And I'm like, no, they need to be together to be a coherent meal. And the mindset mastery element, there's one of the exercises. Well, actually, I'll tell you a couple of that because they work together. One of them is the, what's the worst that could happen if I pursue my passion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so whatever it is that you're pursuing, what is the worst that's going to happen? You'll realize, and anybody who does this exercise, is that 90% of the time it's just the, you know, blah, blah story that we tell ourselves about what could go wrong. And again, back to conditioning, it's about the underlying benefit of what happens if I let go of that. And the best example I can give is smoking. Most people say, I want to quit smoking. Well, why don't they quit smoking? Because there's an underlying benefit there. So if they start realizing, number one, what is the underlying benefit? So put a list of going, okay, if I pursue that passion, what will I benefit from? And then the more you list, then you will find that, okay, the probability of the positive things at the other end will be more motivating. That's one thing. So that's a motivation too. But then there's something that will still hold us back to the comfort of what we know. The devil we know is always more comfortable than what we don't know. Then I do another exercise and I go, what will I regret when I do not pursue my passion? So if I'm now fast forward 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, and I look back and I go, I have not pursued my passion, what will I regret? And then you start writing the regrets. That gives people a motivation away from, because they don't want to go there. So now they're pushed from one side of not being comfortable to stay where they are. So I make this very uncomfortable, because most of us struggle with getting too comfortable being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a juxtapose, because we need to find comfort, but sometimes we get too comfortable in being in a very messy, dirty, uncomfortable, energetic situation in our life. And we're just like, yeah, whatever, let it be. Because homeostasis is nature of life. So we will find homeostasis after a while. And we need a bit of that discomfort to give us motivation. And when we get over that by making the situation so uncomfortable and so ugly and showing all the negativities of the current status and the positivities of the future status. And the last point is, what's the worst that could happen? Because that's the only thing that blocks us from taking that, which is the door, that gateway that will open up. And then get over it. It's like, okay, what's the worst that could happen? Oh, I might try and fail. Okay, and what happens when you fail? Oh, people will judge me. Huh? People judgment. There's always a fear of a negative consequence that is irrational. It's the judgment of a higher spiritual authority, the judgment of a person or a social setting, the judgment of a family, the loss of money, the loss of health. Most of them are just irrational fears. When we write three things down, one, what will I regret if I don't do it? What will I benefit if I do it? And what's the worst that could happen? Those three give that arrow for people to accelerate.
I like that. There's a quote in your book, and I'm not going to be able to remember it, that resonated for me, because I was also reading Dan Pink's book on regret, which was, regret is for the things that we did not do, and it'll ease over time. So the regret that we do for things we do, and maybe they don't go according to plan, they will dissipate over time. They will be a distant memory. But it's the things that we never get around to doing, for whatever reason, those are the ones that we regret the most. So Mustafa, as we come to the end of our time together, how can our listeners and our viewers learn more about you and your excellent book?
Morag, thank you very much for having me on the show. And I'm really honored and excited that you allowed me to be here and you challenged me with questions that you really well thought. As a thanks to you and to your listeners, I would love to give everyone listening to this free access to an e-copy of my book and my previous two books also, and a lot of other bonuses, including a specially designed meditation and inspirational posters and so on. If they go to mustafa.com/slingshot, Mustafa is spelled M-O-U-S-T-A-F-A, slingshot, like slingshot. There will be a space where they write their name and email, and there's supposed to be a code. If they write people for people first for your show, they will be able to download and access that those bonuses for free.
Mustafa, I am so grateful for our conversation today. Thank you. I'll make sure that information is in the show notes below. But I wish you ongoing success and a whole heap of passion in everything that you choose to do.
Thank you very much, Morag. And I hope everybody on this show, listening to this show, realizes that you are the master of your destiny. So live passionately.
Thank you so much for joining Morag today. If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe so you don't miss a thing. If you learned something worth sharing, share it. Cultivate your relationships today when you don't need anything before you need something. Be sure to follow Sky Team and Morag on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you have any ideas about topics we should tackle, interviews we should do, or if you yourself would like to be on the show, drop us a line at info@skyteam.com. That's SKYE team.com. Thanks again for joining us today. And remember, business is personal and relationships matter. We are your allies.